The Web's Michael Smith. It's episode 67 of the Canes Cast, and I've got a question for you.
What's that?
Why is the entire league 3 points out of a playoff spot?
Oh, it's a very valid question. It's that time of the season. Well, it's been that time of the season for a while now. I feel like the standings haven't really moved. There's been no separation, really.
Well, that's the reason why I asked that question is usually now we know, all right, these teams are in, these teams are going to start falling by the wayside. You look at the Metro Division, it's 8 points between first and last. That's four games. I mean, that's not a ton of ground to make up when you've got 60 games left in the season or 59 as the Carolina Hurricanes stand right now. And the Canes are a team just 4 points out of first place behind the Washington Capitals. And I think that this year has really shown more than any other, you have to avoid those losing streaks. And you need to, in a five-game segment, you need to be 4-1 or 3-1-1. And if you do that, you got a shot at being a playoff team come the end of the year.
That's what made Saturday's game so interesting and so, I think, playoff-like, in that the winning team was going to jump into a playoff spot, whether it was going to be the Hurricanes or the Islanders, and obviously it was ultimately the Islanders winning their third straight game over the Hurricanes this season. But a win jumped that team from out of a playoff spot into the top three in the division.
Yep.
So a lot can happen in the span of just a game here as we're just a week, not even a week past Thanksgiving, just a few days past Thanksgiving. Still a lot of movement in the standings. And like you said, that just magnifies how critical these stretches are and how critical it is to avoid long winless stretches and try to string together as many consecutive wins and points as you can get.
All right. Well, let's start with the good here for this edition of the Canes Cast episode 67, because there's lots for us to go over. Most notably, maybe two of the better games we've seen the Hurricanes play this year, a 5-2 win over the Toronto Maple Leafs, where they were better than one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference so far for the majority of the game. And then Jordan Martinook night at PNC Arena in a 4-1 win over Florida. But I think that you go to that Toronto game, that shows me that kind of what I just said, there's not that difference anymore. When I take a look at who the best teams are in the league, you know, it used to be, and I've got a little bit of watching on you as far as the age goes, but the way hockey was set up, it used to be like these teams are in. No matter what, we know they're in. Everybody else is kind of fighting for it. Now, you know, Tampa Bay, Nashville are really good teams, but they're capable of being beat on every night. Toronto is a very good team, but they're capable of being beat on every night. It's not like those teams used to roll into town and roll out with 2 points the way that it used to be.
And for the Hurricanes, I think that was a statement victory in that they were just coming off a weekend and that they weren't happy with their performance against Columbus. And we talked about this last week on the podcast. And they were able to bounce back with a 2-1 win over New Jersey. But in order to make that mean something, they needed to go on a little bit of a run. And they were able to start it with, a statement win over Toronto. Toronto was the number one team in the East coming into that game. Of course, like we've discussed, the standings change on a night-to-night basis. And by the end of that game, they were no longer number one in the Eastern Conference. But for the Hurricanes to play the way they did against them, to find the offense and then to seal the victory late was big. It was a big step for this club to know that they can play with anybody in this league, and not only play with anybody in this league, but really dictate the game, dictate the way they want to play against any team in this league. And now the challenge, as we saw on Saturday, is to do it each and every night. The Hurricanes can't afford to come off of the way they play for, as Brendan Moore says, for even a breath. And I think that's unfortunately what we saw Saturday night. We'll discuss more about that later. But I really like the way the team played on Wednesday night against a very good team, a team that's likely going to make the playoffs in the Eastern Conference. Obviously without Austin Matthews at the moment, but still a very talented club. And the Hurricanes played very well. Two goals within, 22 seconds?
Yep.
And that came after a game in which they scored 2 goals in 8 seconds. So quick strikes, taking the lead, playing with the lead and not giving it up. And then when Toronto pushes back and gets within a goal, the Hurricanes just build upon that lead, stretch their lead, and come away with 2 points. So I was very impressed with the way they played Wednesday night. And like you said, they followed it up two nights later against Florida, Jordan Martinook, a big part of that victory with his first career hat trick.
Yeah, and let me go back to Toronto for half a second.
Sure.
If the Canes, when we talked about last week here on CanesCast, consistency, you know, C is for cookie and consistency for the Carolina Hurricanes. If they can get to that effort every night, I think they will be a playoff team. But that's just the hardest thing right now. And trust us, we're going to get into where the lack of consistency has shown its head for the Canes too. But let's go to Friday night,
sure.
PNC Arena. Jordan Martinook gets his first career hat trick in the National Hockey League. But the arena was rocking.
Oh, yeah.
Once the Canes really took control of that game, that third period, that's been the loudest PNC Arena's been in a few seasons. The building's gotten loud, but it just was a fun energy to be around. And it was one of those games where, to me, that shows where the Canes have this depth that they've been trying to cultivate, trying to develop. It can't just be the Aho, Teravainen, and Ferland line. It's got to be other guys. And now we're starting to see there are other guys. We're starting to see Andrei Svechnikov, who had a great game against
really
the Toronto
game.
Maple Leafs. Mm-hmm. He had another solid game. That's the thing you want to see out of a rookie. Okay, don't show me the flash. You know, show me the flame for a while. And he started to heat up and had two really good games in a row. I think that we're seeing that, and Jordan Martinook and him have this really good chemistry that I think is really helping Andrei Svechnikov here in his rookie year. And then on the same side, it's helping Jordan Martinook playing with players like Andrei Svechnikov and Lucas Walmark, where they kind of put all of this together.
And that line has been together for basically the whole season, and it's been
Rod
good.
Rod Brindamore really hasn't, as a head coach, really hasn't been the chemistry teacher behind the bench. He wants these teams, he wants his team, he wants these lines to figure everything out themselves. That's what he keeps going for, and I kind of like that because, you know, in years past, I had another lifetime and did things. People would always complain, they mix up the lines too quick. They mix up the lines too quick. And now it's, oh, they're keeping the lines together. Well, I'd rather keep lines together where they have chemistry and you know what you're getting as opposed to jumbling it up, which we did see the other night in Brooklyn.
Yeah, and that line has been good for a while. And for them to finally get rewarded for their efforts, I think you look at the chances that they were creating. They were creating chances. The puck just wasn't going into the net. But against Florida, you know, Jordan Martinook, his first career hat trick, getting a couple of goals, getting that first goal, and then helping stretch the Hurricanes' lead with that second goal in the third period, and then sealing the deal with the empty netter late in the third period. And you said it best, that PNC Arena crowd was just feeding off of, I believe, the Hurricanes' energy, and vice versa, too.
Oh, yeah.
I think the Hurricanes fed off of the energy in the crowd. And I know Jordan Martinook, in his post-game interview with you on the bench, you know, said that it didn't go unnoticed. Like, the players noticed this type of stuff.
That, by the way, was the most fun interview I've ever had after a game on the bench in the three seasons of being your intrepid TV reporter for the Carolina Hurricanes. So it was great when he wooed at the end of it. Like, the crowd just lost their mind. And it's hard not to get caught up in the energy like that. And, you know, hopefully that's one thing that the Hurricanes really do need to do, Michael. They need to make PNC Arena a hard place for the opponent to come in and get points. And it does for me. It goes hand in glove. It's the play of the team on the ice. But there are buildings that you walk into, and you know a crowd's going to be on us the second we hit the ice. Could be a little intimidating. That building, when it was rocking and rolling, especially in 2006, that's a hard place to go play for the opposition. And I think that's one of the things that was good to see for a night. Now, kind of like what I just talked about, rookies. Let's see it for a couple more nights.
Right.
Anaheim's going to be the next opportunity for that.
And I think as the Hurricanes continue to build and grow as a team, as they continue to keep winning, you're going to see that crowd energy continue to build as well. And the Hurricanes are going to continue to feed on that. A constant, too, in those three wins last week, New Jersey, Toronto, and Florida, was the play of Curtis McElhinney in net. And he's a guy who the Hurricanes claimed off waivers the first week of October. Talk about great timing. You know, right when Scott Darling goes down with an untimely injury in the last preseason game, the Toronto Maple Leafs are having to make a decision about the future of their goaltending, and they choose to go with a younger look in net. And
Garrett Sparks, who did get a shutout the other night.
And Curtis McElhinney is then relegated to waivers, where they were hoping he would obviously clear and go to their AHL club. But instead, the Hurricanes, in need of a goaltender, snatched him up on waivers, and they've held on to three goaltenders since then. Peter Mrazek obviously going down with an injury as well. And all three goaltenders at practice today. We should note we're recording this here on Monday, November 26th, while the Hurricanes are practicing at Raleigh Center Ice before departing to Montreal. All three goaltenders on the ice. But Curtis McElhinney didn't see a lot of work. You know, once Scott Darling came back, the Hurricanes sort of went with the Darling-Mrazek duo that they thought they were going to really go through the season with. But then Mrazek goes down with the injury, and all of a sudden Curtis McElhinney is taking on a bigger role. And he stepped in and provided just steady goaltending for the Hurricanes. For those three games, he made the saves, and this is going to sound silly or maybe even cliche, but he made the saves that he needed to make. And that's the simplest way of putting it. When the defense broke down or when the Hurricanes needed a save, he was there to make the save. And that's what I think led to a confidence in front of him. And he was certainly a big part of those three victories.
Yeah, I don't think it's silly because I think I said that last week on the podcast about the New Jersey game, which is he made the saves he's supposed to. He didn't let in the deflating goal where, you know, you can see the bench hang their heads or the goalie hang his head. He made all the stops he's supposed to, and he's a professional goaltender. Justin Williams has said it. He's a calming force. And when you can have a goalie be a calming force behind you, that goes a really long way. And we'll see what the Hurricanes goaltender situation shakes out to be. Yes, there's lots of questions. Ideally, all three goalies would be playing great, and you'd have a really tough decision to make.
Right.
But right now, there's still tough decisions to make because this organization wants to see Scott Darling succeed. We all want to see him succeed. And we were thinking maybe he was onto something after those two games against the Chicago Blackhawks. The other night, let's just get to this one because I think it kind of goes.
We'll get this one out of the way.
Kind of goes together. The other night against the New York Islanders, just throw out everybody's performance in that one. The first two goals, they left Scott Darling out to dry. And when I say they, the entire team.
Yeah, I mean, when you've got a guy, Valtteri Filppula, who is just weaving his way through the defense, you know, sticks just sort of swatting at him, not doing much. There's not much Scott Darling's going to be able to do with that. And then you're leaving a guy open right in the slot for a pretty easy tap. And much like, you know, Williams being left alone in the slot against Toronto, there's not much the goaltender is going to be able to do with a guy parked right at the top of the blue paint.
Yeah.
And that set the tone. First two shots of the game, Islanders have a 2-0 lead. And they're a team, and we've talked about it before with Barry Trotz behind the bench, who once they get that lead, even if it's a one-goal lead, they're just going to sit on it. So a two-goal lead at home, they just shut it down.
Yeah, as you mentioned, the second goal, the Anthony Beauvillier goal, I mean, you and I could have scored that.
I would like to think so.
Yeah, I mean, that becomes just a tap-in at that point in time. But then, you know, you get into the way that game's played. I thought Rod Brind'Amour said it best after the game. I know Islander fans are losing their mind because they're 3-0 against the Carolina Hurricanes this year, as the Canes are 0-2-1 against the Islanders because there's an overtime game in there.
Mm-hmm.
The first period shots on goal were 6-5.
Yes.
6-5.
I don't think it even – the Islanders didn't even get to 20 shots, did they?
No, they got to 19. They had five shots in the second period and a 3-0 lead. So when Rod Brind'Amour said that game was gross for two periods, I agree with him because I was ringside for it.
Yes, he was speaking the truth. And that's – I think – and Islanders fans aren't going to be listening to this podcast, but
well,
I think
– I thought Blues fans weren't listening to this, and they do. So you'll never know. You pick up the stray one.
I interpreted Rod Brind'Amour's comments after the game to be way more introspective than they were about the other team. He was assessing the performance of his own team and saying, look, we were garbage tonight.
Yeah.
And we would, you know, we looked like a minor league team. He said the game was gross. The game was gross. The Islanders took advantage of really two mistakes by Carolina, and credit to them for doing that. That's what good teams do. They take advantage. But they didn't do a whole lot either outside of that.
No, and that's why when he said, and he even said, the first two periods they probably weren't happy with because they had 11 shots on goal. They'll take the 3-0 lead. And again, I don't read too much into that. That's a head coach who was, for the first time this year, he wasn't happy after the Columbus game. This was the first time where I think the full effort was one that got to the head coach, especially after the game the night before. Well, we can get into, you know what, the players won't do it and I won't do it anymore either. We can get into They played a 7:30 game and then had to come back, and the Islanders played a 4 o'clock game the day before, and they had, we can get, it's an excuse. These are all professional athletes now, and you know, that was an, you can at least have the effort. You know, sometimes the game ain't going to be there, but the effort should be. And that's one that the Canes need to flush as they get ready to move on and take on a very, very resurgent Montreal Canadian team.
A thumbs down review from Justin Falk. I don't know if he listens. Maybe he rated us one star. We'll have to ask him.
We'll ask him post post CanesCast episode 67. Are you the one star?
Here's the thing about Saturday's game.
Flush
after
it.
A 5-1-1 stretch, second half of a back-to-back on the road against a team that's, we'll put it, well, that's dominated the Hurricanes this season. Well, I won't even say that.
Dominated
the
style
best.
Of play. How about
right.
that?
They've been able to dictate their pace again. The Hurricanes haven't been able to finish against Thomas Grace, which is a whole nother thing in itself. But if the Hurricanes can respond in Tuesday on Montreal, which I believe they will, because after that effort, I think anything above that is going to be considered progress. If the Hurricanes can rebound and get back on track, Saturday's game becomes a blip on the radar.
Absolutely. Because, again, we've talked about this, and we talked about it after, you know, the Columbus game, too, when we did last week's yep. Canes Cast. You are going to have bad games in the course of an 82-game season. It is going to happen. This was just one where it was unfortunate because the Canes, after a lot of hand-wringing on the West Coast trip that they had with Arizona, Vegas, St. Louis, but then the win against Chicago, overtime, stinks that you lose to Detroit. But then you start building up wins again. You just put up the stretch. The hand-wringing comes back over every loss. And I don't want to do the Aaron Rodgers. Everybody relax. But you can't think that the team is going to be a Stanley Cup champion because they get a 5-2 win over the Leafs. And you can't think that they're going to be the last place team in the league because they get beat 4-1 by the New York
right.
Islanders.
It's riding the roller coaster. You can't get too high. You can't yeah. get too low.
You actually need to be Curtis McElhinney.
Yeah, exactly.
Seriously.
Steady. Steady and calm. It becomes a concern if the Hurricanes, you know, don't get back in the win column this week. Look at this.
We've got
another.
Another evidently Paul Kropelka does listen to the CanesCast. He just said that we're Mensa candidates, so feeling very good. Assistant General Manager Paul Kropelka walking past us. This is kind of a live podcast.
It kind of
recording
is.
Right now.
It kind of is.
So
we've had two negative reviews already. Wow, tough crowd.
That's fine. I'm all yeah. right with that. We take the good with the bad. Just let me finish up the one thought, though, about the roller coaster.
Sure.
And it goes back to how the Canes have played the Islanders. I used to love boxing when we used to get good fights all the time. But how you score a fight isn't necessarily, when it goes to a decision, isn't necessarily, oh, well, Michael Smith was, you know, the guy who landed more power punches. It was, did Michael Smith dictate the tempo of the fight? Did we fight the fight you wanted to fight or fight the fight I wanted to? The Islanders have forced the Hurricanes to fight the fight the Islanders want to have for this three rounds or three periods, we'll put it. It's enough analogies, but that's it. And when the Canes are at their best, we saw it against Florida. We saw it against Toronto. They're imposing their will. You're going to play our game. You have to come and skate with us and play up-tempo and do that. So I'm going to be really interested to see how the Canes perform against the Montreal Canadiens on Tuesday night or tomorrow night, depending on when you're listening to the CanesCast, because the Habs are a team now that wants to start playing up-tempo. So this is going to be a really, really good test and a good test on the road, because even when Montreal is down, when you go play in Centre-Belle, it's still a tough place to go and try to get a win because the crowd's going to be up and on it. But you can also get the crowd, much like Rocky IV, to turn on their fighter. I'm done with the fighting analogies.
The Hurricanes will get their fourth and final crack of the regular season at the New York Islanders in January at Nassau Coliseum. I think it's called something else.
Yeah,
there's a long name.
Yeah.
It's Nassau Coliseum. I actually can't wait to go back.
I've never been, so.
I never thought I'd say that, but hockey at Barclays just isn't good.
I'll
agree. We'll leave it at that.
I'll agree. The arena was not set up for hockey.
No, it was not
at
set
all.
Up for hockey.
At all.
Yeah.
At all.
At all.
At all.
At all. Hey, now's the time, a good time to talk to Jordan Martinook on how the Canes can turn it around and his performance Friday night against the Florida Panthers.
First off, let me thank you for the best post-game on-the-bench interview in the history of the National Hockey League, Jordan. I've I've never been told I was good at anything except for that interview, so I really appreciate that. Same time, let's go back to that game Friday night. How much fun is that for you? It's your first NHL hat trick. The crowd's going nuts. Has it had a moment to sink in for you?
It was kind of, we had to get on the plane right away, so I didn't really get to enjoy it too much. But it was really cool, something I'll never forget, and it was a good, crazy night and a lot of fun.
I know you said after the game your mom was in Vegas and your dad was probably hitting the roof of the basement. Have you had a chance to talk with them about it yet?
Yeah, my dad was hitting the roof in the basement. He said that his dog kept looking at him, and or my parents' dog looking at him, shaking his head, kind of like, "What are you yelling at?" But he was pretty pumped. He said his phone was blown up for a couple of days, and then I called my mom right after, and she said they were walking past the sports book, and they kind of like turned their head, and they seen that they had like me on the screen, and then she had to check her phone right away, and then I called her. So yeah, it was. It's cool to talk to them after.
Nice. And good for the line to get rewarded, too, because you three have been together for most of the season and generating chances. But to get rewarded, does that feel good?
Yeah. I said after the game, I think you could have seen it coming the way that we were playing. And Svech was a man kind of possessed out there. He's playing unbelievable hockey. And Wally, I just can't say enough good things about him. He's this – one of the smartest guys I've ever played with. He just knows where to be, and he can read off us so good. And he works just as hard as both of us. So he's a great compliment to what we do. And I think both of them would say the same. I think Svech would maybe want a little more from us at times, but. It's been fun playing with those guys.
So is that where the soccer animosity came about? Where heard that he drilled you in the head with the soccer ball?
He hit me in the manly parts early, and then later on put one right off my head. So it was we were pretty testy there for a little bit, and usually me and him get along pretty good. So I was not happy.
At the same time. How's that relationship developed? Is that one of those things you're forced in because you're line mates? But some people are saying that seems to be an odd couple where Jordan Martinuk and Andrei Svechnikov, but you've really taken them under your wing. Why has it been so easy for you to do that?
I think just his personality, such a like a happy-go-lucky guy, and I think I'm pretty similar to that. So whenever I with the language barrier, but he speaks such good English, I can kind of get after him here and there, and I have a lot of fun with him, and he seems to enjoy it, and he gives it back to me just as much as I give it to him. So it's been a good relationship, and I know he's young, he's new, and I'm new, so it's just trying to ease each other in, and it's been a good fit, I guess.
Yeah, you mentioned the fact that you're new. What has it been like transitioning to a new locker room, really, for the first time in your NHL career?
It was pretty seamless. I think the first maybe 2 weeks before camp was a little hard, just because everybody kind of knew each other beforehand. But once we got into training camp and kind of got down to the team, I'm a guy that I can't stay quiet too long. I think you could ask everybody in this room. I probably need to shut up sometimes. But I'm always I feel like I'm always in the middle of things and talking, and that's just the way I am. I wasn't going to come in here and stay quiet all year. So that's either you like me or I don't know. You just got to deal with it.
I think right now the head coach of this team, Rod Brindamore, likes you a lot on this team and what you bring to the ice. What has he been as a first-year head coach? Because we think of all the first-year players. He's a first-year head coach. What has he been like to play for and in the influence he's had on you guys?
Yeah, I think he's done it. Excellent job. He's I think I've said it in other interviews, I've just never been with a coach that can bring such a positive influence to everything he does. I think it settles especially a younger group that we have down, is that he can remain calm and positive. And I've had coaches before where you're always kind of like looking over your shoulder, and then you'd start gripping your stick a little tight, and he's a guy that he lets you play, and if you make a mistake, he's going to let you know that you made the mistake, but then he'll give you some positive reinforcements, how to fix it and how to do it better. And just for me to have a guy like Roddy, just the way he played and the way that I play, I think he can respect the type of player I am, and I can't say enough good things about him too. It's been really good to play for him.
You said something earlier this year about this team has this belief that no matter what the score is, they're not out of a game. How important, really, in the grand scheme of things, is it to have that? And nothing against any of the other teams you might have played for in the past, but to be like, okay, if we give up the first goal or we're down 2-0, we can still get out of this hole.
Yeah, I think you want that from any team. You want to look over and have. If guys start hanging their heads, that's when you really start to wonder what's going on. But yeah, we've been positive all year, and I don't know if it's because we're young and not smart enough yet, or not haven't been through it enough. But yeah, it's whenever you can have that feeling, it's definitely good.
And then immediately, you know, coming off of that game Saturday, how do you just flush that and get back to what this team has made its identity here for much of the season?
Yeah, I don't know really what to say about the Saturday game. It is what it is. We came out laid an egg, so we know how to play. You know how this team is and how we are, how we play is nose down, go forward check, and work hard. And everybody knows that's what we're going to do, and that's what we're going to get back to tomorrow.
And I know everybody's looking forward to that. Also, the mustache. I have gotten some insider information that this is a family thing, that there's been some good facial hair in your family, so we shouldn't be shocked at how good Movember's coming in for you.
Yeah, my dad had a pretty good mustache up until I was probably 8 or 9 years old, and then hasn't had one since. I think my first year in the NHL when I did the Movember thing, he tried to grow one too, and that lasted about 2 weeks, and then my mom got on him. But yeah, I come by it honestly. I'm guessing you're gonna post the picture that my mom tweeted at you. So he had a pretty good lip room, and I just like to follow in his footsteps, I guess.
Well, I know that they're all proud of the hat trick, and great to have you here in the locker room, Jordan. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Jordan Martinook, a sneaky, sneaky acquisition by the Hurricanes in the offseason.
First acquisition that the new front office made, where they traded Marcus Kruger to Arizona for Jordan Martinook. And Jordan Martinook has been fantastic for this hockey team.
Yep.
He's the player that I say that you have to have on your roster if you're going to be a winner, because of not just the performance we've seen on the ice. By the way, have we mentioned how good of a penalty killer he is?
Yeah.
He is a outstanding penalty killer. And he and Warren Fogle has formed a pretty good duo up top. But not only that, Michael, he's just a great guy to have in the locker room.
Yeah, and Rod Brind'Amour talked the other day about how he's taken Andrei Svechnikov under his wing. And it's an interesting dynamic because you have a guy in Martinook who is new to this team and this market, and a guy in Andrei Svechnikov who, it's the same exact yep. scenario, but he's young, he's new to this league, he's learning as he goes, and to have a guy like Jordan Martinook sort of showing him the ropes is good for him, and I'm sure good for the both of them.
Yo, absolutely it is, Michael.
I think after Saturday's performance in Brooklyn, we're going to see some changes to the Hurricanes lineup. Yeah. At least that's what the moves, the transactions on Saturday would lead me to believe. Trevor Carrick, who stepped in for Hayden Fleury, who's out with a concussion. He suffered that concussion on Friday night against Florida, was hit in the neutral zone by Troy Brouwer right before Brouwer scored that goal to break Curtis McElhinney's shutout. Shaken up by it, diagnosed with a concussion, so he's out indefinitely, yeah. You know, until those symptoms clear up.
Right. Trevor, I hate doing the prognostication on when players return. Everybody always wants to know that. You know, when's Peter going to be back in officially? All of those things, that's Mrazek we're talking about. But especially when it comes to a concussion, you can't set a timetable for it. It's just the answer is when the player is ready for it.
Yeah. So Trevor Carrick came up and played in Brooklyn. Had a fight, tried to give the Hurricanes some spark.
Yep.
But yeah, I just think the energy levels weren't there. He was reassigned to Charlotte on Sunday. Jake Bean coming up, his first NHL recall. He could make his NHL debut, and all indications are that he probably will tomorrow, Tuesday night in Montreal. I don't think Brett Pesce is quite there, quite back from his lower body injury just yet. In fact, is he even practicing today? I'm not sure he's even practicing today.
Nope.
So Jake Bean probably making his debut in Montreal on Tuesday, and Valentin Zhikov, who played six games during a conditioning stint down with the Charlotte Checkers, scored two goals in that time back with the team. I wouldn't be surprised to see him back in the lineup as well.
I think that both of those players will draw in just because, let's go back to the post game that Rod Brind'Amour had. He was just trying to shake things up and find anything that could work against the Islanders and didn't. So now he can shake things up a little bit as far as inserting players into the lineup. He knows what he's going to get out of Valentin Zhikov, and we can guess where he'll go, but the logical or odds-on place for it would be taking Phil DiGiuseppe's spot on that line that is being anchored right now by Victor Rask. So that'll be something that could actually be a line that'll be worth watching, Victor Rask with Valentin Zhikov, and then you're going to put Warren Fogle out there. Although we did see Victor Rask centering for Sebastian Aho, who moved out to the wing. But again, that was just trying to get a spark for the Canes on Saturday night in Brooklyn against the Islanders. And Jake Bean is drafted to be a dynamic offensive defenseman, a guy who can help on the power play. We're going to see exactly what he can do, because I'm with you. I don't think you call him up unless you're going to draw him in the lineup against Montreal on Tuesday night.
And in his first professional season, he's, I think, gotten better as the season has gone along in Charlotte. He's got 11 points, 3 goals, and 8 assists in 21 games this season. Made his professional debut in the playoffs last year, but this is his first full season. So he's learning what it takes to be a professional. And I think it takes those guys some time just to get used to the everyday rigors of whether it's the AHL or the NHL. But he's certainly turned on his game here in the last few weeks and gets rewarded with the call-up. And since we're watching here at practice, I guess we should note that Curtis McElhinney is commanding the majority of time in the net. Peter Mrazek, Scott Darling splitting time at the other end of the ice. So if you have a question about who your starter is on Tuesday night in Montreal, there it is.
I didn't have a question.
Okay.
I truly didn't have a question. Michael Ferland agrees with us
Michael
as well,
Ferland,
I guess.
Appreciating the Canes. I'm going to take that as a positive review.
There it is. There's our first five-star review from the team. Also, Jake Bean has been working with Trevor Van Riemsdyk at practice here today. Maybe we'll start making this a regular thing as far as some practice. We can get some notes from practice.
We got some feedback on it last time when we recorded the podcast while the team was practicing in Vegas, and people seem to like the gnat sound of practice in the background. So hopefully the audio quality is good this time, and hopefully you guys enjoy this.
Yeah, and again, I think that we'll take a look at the goaltending situation after Tuesday night. If Curtis McElhinney gets the win against Montreal, I think it's his crease right now. And
you got to roll with the hot hand.
Well, that's just it, and I don't think that there's anything wrong with that. Like, if you keep playing and you keep getting the results you want from one guy, you don't want to take him out of the lineup. Michael Ferland clearly loving
very
what we
active.
Have to say right now on this podcast. So I'm happy to do so. But I think that this week, just the two games this week, I'm not really going to count what we have as far as the first part of the road trip coming up, but just the two games this week, Montreal and Anaheim. Montreal in Montreal, Anaheim at PNC Arena, and then we get into December. And on December 2nd, we start a West Coast swing with L.A., San Jose, and then you see Anaheim again. But even though it's only two games this week, these are two games for the Canes to get their mind right, come up with a win on the road, and then come up with another big win at home before you go away for 8 days out west against a couple of teams trying to find it. But we'll preview that because there will be a podcast from somewhere, if I know Michael Smith, the beach.
Yeah, I mean, we might as
in
well.
In California.
That's going to be a good one.
Oh, I'm sure it will
Episode
be.
68, Hotel California.
Oh,
it's already named and everything.
If memory serves me, we're going to be staying close to Hotel California, so we might need to snap a photo next to that one. Actually, take a little care there. All right, well, it's this time of the show.
If you like it, you can take it. If you don't, send it right back.
I've got one.
On your own?
Well,
sure, all right.
I've got it.
You are the internet.
I've pulled it up.
You are the web's Michael Smith, so yes,
my people are looking out for me.
No, they are. I like it.
I can't even credit this person because their name is written in Cyrillic.
It's written in Russian. So
I no idea, but at FreeXJC is the Twitter handle. Not even going to try to pronounce the name, but here's a like it, take it for next week. Trip will learn to floss like a boss by the end of the regular season.
Oh, I'll take it. I'll take it.
I think he's well on his way.
I will take it.
I think he's making progress.
And if I could for a moment, I'm glad we have the lighthearted moment there. On all seriousness, Tripp Tracy, he lost his father on Saturday morning. And his dad and his mom both told him that no matter what, his father had been in a little bit of failing health. And that's really nobody's business but the Tracys, but to let folks know. But they had told him that they want him to continue to call the games and do the games. And Tripp did that on Saturday. But I do believe, Michael, I can speak for everybody within the organization and certainly for you and I, that our thoughts and prayers and condolences are with the entire Tracy family. Emmett Tracy meant a ton to Tripp Tracy. And it's just one of those things where, for those of you who don't know Tripp, the guy, he just has a heart of gold. And he loves this organization. He loves hockey, but he loves his family. And the links that he has gone through in his lifetime for his family, they mean a lot to him. And I know this is a tough time for Tripp, but this is one time for the people out there who want to know what the man is like. Just, he's so fiercely loyal to those who are around him. And our hearts are with Tripp, and hopefully condolences, which they only do so much, right, will get sent to the Tracy family. But we really do appreciate what Tripp means to this organization. I know I do. You know, I jumped on the TV side, and, you know, Tripp and I have known each other for 11 years now. But when I jumped to the TV side, he was the first guy who goes, "You're going to be great, partner. Don't worry about a thing." And those were like his first words to me. So, again, our deepest condolences to Tripp and his family.
Yep. And thoughts and prayers with him. Tripp, if you're listening, you know we're with you every step of the way. Like you said, family is very important to him. And when we're on the road, we're family. And so we're definitely thinking of you and your family in this time.
And agreed. He will floss like a boss by the end of the
year.
So
yeah.
I'll take it. I know that you'll take that as well. For me, we have a lot of question marks right now. This is going to be a tough one for you, Michael.
Okay. I'm ready for it.
Curtis McElhaney will be on the Carolina Hurricanes roster at the end of the season, at the end of the regular season.
I thought you were going to say the end of the calendar year.
That's a month.
That is a month from now.
I was gonna go the easy way out on that one, but I'm gonna go for the whole year.
Yeah, and that makes it more difficult, because at the end of the calendar year, I'd say yes, I'd take that. You know, I think I'm also gonna take at the end of the year. I'm going to take it because I think what we've seen is the Hurricanes have found a veteran goaltender who, I don't know if he's their starter. They're riding the hot hand right now. But he's certainly a very capable veteran backup goaltender. Yep. And I don't see why – I don't think the team has a good reason why they wouldn't want him on their roster right now. And I think that's going to continue throughout the rest of the season. So I'm going to take it. I'm going to say he's going to be in the team picture come late March, early April.
Yeah, I put that out there because, again, I think he's going to be here through the calendar year. I think he will make it through the month of December for sure. I almost wanted to change it to, well, the Canes have three goalies. And that one, no matter what the answer is unfair to someone.
Yeah.
This one, I leave that question a little bit more ambiguous on purpose, folks. It is a Canes cast. So we have a bunch more of these to do as the year goes. I just think that the Canes might run this three-goalie system for the rest of the year, if that's what they want to. But Curtis McElhaney, through his start of the season, has shown you no reason to keep him off of this roster if you're the Carolina Hurricanes. Just no reason whatsoever. And, you know, if we're going to talk about what goalies are going to do, Curtis McElhaney is 6-2-0 so far in 8 games for the Carolina Hurricanes. It's pretty
that
darn
good
winning percentage.
Yep.
If you go back to last year for winning percentages, I think it might be the last 2 years, the only other goalies with better winning percentages were the guys who were the Vezina Trophy finalists last season. That's good company to be in.
Yeah. He's come in and provided a steady hand, and he's won games. That's the most important part, is he's getting the results.
Yeah.
And that's what the Hurricanes need right now, and that's why they're riding the hot hand. Rod Brindamore has said, we need that position.
Yep.
We need some solidity in that position. Solidity? Did I make up a word?
I think you just did, but I'll go with it.
It sounds right. We'll go with it. And they found
about,
it in Curtis
I think you
McElhinney.
Wanted to go stability.
Stability?
And
solidity.
Solid play. I think you wanted to go solid play and stability.
Maybe
and you
so.
Went solidity.
Well, you know.
Or solidarity, whichever you want to
yeah.
go.
Yeah. I don't know. It's tough when you don't have Microsoft Word to underline it.
Oh, man. Well, remember, Michael Smith's the DJ, and I'm the rapper. For those of you who can remember DJ Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince, I used to be young once. All right.
Do you have anything else here? It's really cold inside RCI. It's probably the coldest day that we've had inside here this season.
Well, remember, I grew up in Western New York, and this is the coldest spot I've ever been in my life. People don't believe that, but 'tis true. I do have a few more things. I just wanted to get in the power play and the penalty kill for a second.
Yeah.
And again, overreactions, which is what people love to do to everything right now. Remember the power play and the penalty kills killing the Carolina Hurricanes. They're not And because stats, and the stats showed it, can't argue that. You know, if the puck's not going in the net on the power play, guess what? It's not good. If the puck's going in when you're trying to kill off a penalty, that's not good either. Carolina Hurricanes in the month of November have the fourth best penalty killing unit in the National Hockey League. And when I say unit, I'm not going with one over two. It's the entire group. And their power play has jumped up to better than middle of the pack. They're knocking on the door of being top 10. They were 12th at last look. For power play and penalty kill units in the National Hockey
League.
Yeah,
I think if I'm
correct. For the month of November, I have to put the asterisks next to that.
I think if I'm correct, the Hurricanes have scored at least a power play goal in seven of their last nine games.
Yep.
And that's good. That's consistency. That's what you want to see. And I know Justin Williams.
That's solidity.
That's solidity. I know Justin Williams said, you know, after Saturday's game that he doesn't take any solace that the power play converted in the third period to get the Canes on the board. But It is worth noting, and it is an encouraging sign that even in games like that, the power play still finds a way to convert.
Yep.
And it was a nice passing play. Dougie Hamilton over to Lucas Walmart, cross ice to Justin Williams. That was a nice play. And in a game that didn't have a lot to write home about, that was at least worth noting that even when the effort is not there, the Hurricanes power play is continuing to convert. That's a good sign for this team as they move forward.
And on the other side, I'll take the penalty kills on this one, Mr. Smith. I think the penalty killers were a victim of bad bounces early on in the season. And now the bounces are starting to go their way, and you've seen it. And part of that has become they've gotten big stops from the goaltenders. And that has been Curtis McElhinney and Scott Darling when they're in on those units. And I think they've just gelled and know where they're supposed to be. And again, there were a lot of new faces. Warren Fogle, Jordan Martinook, those are new guys on the penalty kill that you're talking about. You're bringing in a few other guys. Lucas Walmark is starting to see PK time. Those are new guys who've got to learn a new system. They got it down, and I think that's been very good. And that's what I have here on episode 67 of the Canes Cast, Michael Smith.
Perfect.
You have anything else to add?
Nope.
All right, that's good. So from RCI.
What a place.
Another live, exactly. Another live, well, technically live. Practice was live when we were here.
Yeah.
Oh, we'll save it one more time. Do we have Michael Ferland on a breakaway attempt here?
Ooh.
Oh, Scott Darling.
Flashing the leather.
With a big save. And that means the forwards have to do the lap across the rink. So
I do love watching this. It never gets old.
No, it's fun. And by the way, that's one of those sneaky little things when you talk about shootouts. That guys, the goalies are getting sharp, and the shooters get the opportunity to do it, and you get a chance to see, hey, who's got a move? Maybe I can throw somebody in there.
And I'm sure it's been noted somewhere, but Rod Brindamore does the skates back and forth with the forwards.
Yes, he does.
So,
are you surprised?
No, not at all.
I also want to bring up, he is not in the equipment today because there are three goalies, and four goalies would be confusing, but George Alves, who during a practice where when the team was going to be skated, that's not a drill, during a practice, George Alves did every skate, the down and backs, the cross to cross.
Good workout.
I want to do that for him. Let's quickly say goodbye to Bill Berniston.
Okay, bye, Bill.
Strength and conditioning coach of the Carolina Hurricanes. Thank you, Bill, for tuning in as always. Did you have a good Thanksgiving?
Yes, I enjoyed my ham.
Okay, good.
I also ate turkey, and I also ate pulled pork.
Good.
So I covered all the
all the traditional
couple sides of the pig.
No, evidently all of the traditional,
all of the traditional
Thanksgiving foods.
All of the traditionals
that are at the Webb's, Michael Smith's,
And you had the traditional cowl for Thanksgiving as well.
I did. New tradition. Started now. Can't wait for that question next year when I say, oh, I could have steak every day. And then I could be like,
I wouldn't argue with that.
No, you shouldn't, because it was delicious. All right, that'll do it for us in episode 67 of the Canes Cast, because it is cold in here. For the Web's Michael Smith.
And TV's Mike Maniscalco.
We will talk to you. We'll be in California.
Can't wait. Bye-bye.
Thank you.